Where is he?
Where are you?
Skull Rock. Do you know it?
Hello, this is Stacy reporting live from the Skull Rock broadcast. I am joined by...
Hello, this is Megan. Welcome back to our Stranger Things podcast. We are super excited to be with you again today and super excited to continue with our season 3 rewatch. So that's what's on the agenda for today. But how is it going, Stacy?
It's going. It's definitely going. I can't believe we are in March. It was daylight savings time last night. So even though that's going to throw everybody off, I got to say, you know, more daylight. Give us more daylight. So I am all for the daylight.
All
how are you?
More daylight for sure. Yeah, the weather is starting to kind of, you know, take a turn, be a little bit more spring-like. So that's nice. That's always good. And we've got lots of fun stuff going on this spring. So
we do.
Excited about that, you know, even closer to the Joe tour. So counting down those days. And yeah, pretty good.
Nice. All right. Well, we are doing a deep dive of episode 3, season 3. Case of a Missing Lifeguard.
Yes.
Boom, boom, boom.
And I love how this episode, it basically starts with like the stormy skies. And that's like the whole episode is like this storm happening.
This storm that's brewing. And then finally when it happens, I absolutely agree. I love how it opens to Hopper's cabin at night and Madonna's Angel is playing, and we're basically seeing an ultimate 1980s sleepover. And Max is dancing along, singing to the music, and appears at the mall. They also picked up some teen magazines, and I caught the name of this magazine. It's called Super Teen, which I thought was funny because they always kind of refer to Ella Supergirl.
Oh, yeah.
And those magazines, I don't know if you bought them back in the day, but like Tiger Beat and stuff, they were huge in the 1980s and 90s. And they had all the like movie and TV heartthrobs. And she comes to a centerfold of a young Ralph Macchio. And right away, Max goes, oh, so you found Ralph Macchio. And she kind of gives like the way Eleven is looking at that photo. I agree. Ralph Macchio was best known for the Karate Kid movies. Of course, huge comeback with the Cobra Kai series that is huge on Netflix now.
Yeah.
But in the 1980s, he was known for The Outsiders and The Karate Kid. And right away, Max is like, I wonder if he's a good kisser. And that's when she asks, do you think, is Mike a good kisser? And Eleven's expression is pretty funny. And she's like, well, I don't know. Like, he's my only boyfriend. And when Max says ex-boyfriend, Allie gets a little defeated, and right away she's like, hey, don't worry, you know, I bet they're going to come crawling back to us, crying, going, how can we take them back? And she goes, what I would do to see their faces. And what does Eleven do?
And Eleven realizes that she can see their faces. So Eleven uses her powers to kind of spy on people a lot during this episode.
What a cool power.
Yeah. So they get the radio and put her blindfold on, and she uses her powers, and you see like Max kind of reacting like, is everything okay? And she says that she sees them, and we see them as well.
Yeah.
And Mike is being, you know, just a little bitch.
Just being a little bitch, eating his Doritos, sulking because he got broken up with.
And Lucas is kind of just tired of his bullshit. He's like, you know, like you can't reason. You can't try to look for a reason because Mike's kind of like, what did I do wrong? And he's like, you didn't do anything wrong. Yes, you did, Mike. But that was the whole thing where Mike was like, yeah, you're right. Like women rely on emotion, not logic.
Not logic.
They're a whole different species. And
I love that Eleven goes, they say we are species, emotion, not logic. And right away, Max is like, what?
Yes. So Will, poor Will, it just wants...
He's just setting up that goddamn game the entire time.
Wants to play D&D. Yeah, but then Hopper gets home And
No, we're not skipping over this.
What happened? Oh, this is when that happens. Yes, go ahead. It's your favorite part. I know. It's why you want to be friends with Lucas.
It's why I want to be friends with Lucas. Because first, Mike belches.
Yes.
And you can taste the nacho cheese. And do you notice there's all the new Coke cans littered about on the table? I'm like, we see you, Duffers. We see you with the advertising.
Yeah.
And that's when Lucas goes, I got you beat. And he lifts his leg up and literally lets out a toot that sounds like a boat sounding the horn coming into harbor.
The funniest part was like Will realized what he was going to do. And he's like, Lucas, no, don't.
It's such a loud toot that literally Eleven like jolts out of the void. And Max is like, what's the matter? And she pulls a me. She can't even get it out.
Yeah, She's laughing so hard. Up. Yeah.
Just so cute seeing them laugh together on the floor. And then Hopper comes home.
Then they hear somebody pull in the driveway and it's Hopper. And he's coming home from Enzo's. So he's got his wine with him. And he hears music coming from Elle's room. So he thinks Mike is there. So he starts yelling like, I told you 3 inches. And because the door's shut. And he opens the door and he sees Elle and Max reading their magazines.
Reading their magazines.
Yeah.
Yep.
Not using Elle's powers or anything like that. Max is kind of like snippy with Hopper too, just like Mike is a little bit, because she's like, don't you knock?
And I love that Eleven mirrors Max. She was, geez, don't you knock? And you can tell that Hopper's so stunned that she actually has a female friend over, and he's actually really excited about it. And, you know, it's really cute. And he's like, your folks know? And she's like, uh-huh. And he's like, And Max is like, do you need anything?
Did you need something? Yeah.
Kind of snippy. And right away, Hopper's like, no. And he closes the door. And I love that he is just so pleased that she has made a female friend that he pours really classy his wine into a mug.
Yep.
Kicks off his loafers, puts up his feet in the recliner, turns on the TV as Lover Boy is literally playing. Lover Girl, Lover Boy, forget the name of the song. And he's just so pleased that Mike is not there. Now, what is Elle and Max doing now?
Yeah, so then we continue with these sleepover vibes, and they decide that they're going to play Spin the Bottle, but there's a little twist on this Spin the Bottle, because they've literally listed all of the men and boys, I guess, they could think about, which there was some
interesting of the choices. Yeah.
Mr. Clark was on there, Mr. Painted Wheeler. So they actually land on Mr. Wheeler first, and then they're like, ugh, boring.
He'd just be sleeping the whole time, yeah.
But this is like one of my favorite parts, too, because Max is like, spin it again, and Elle's like, against the rules, and Max is like, we make our own rules.
Which I love. Max is, technically Elle is the only person that can play. So like, of course you'd spin again. But I do like, we make our own rules. And it's almost like the Duffers were kind of taunting us with that scene coming back in season 4, when literally you're like, okay, so Elle has this ability now. And it's just like, no, we make our own rules. We're doing what we want with the story. So really great line there. So they spin it again,
and they land on Billy. And Max is kind of like warning Elle that like Billy, you know, she's a little worried about what Elle is going to see, I think, with Billy. But she's like, Elle's like, it's okay, let me do it or whatever.
Yeah.
So she does go in and she goes into the void. She first sees Billy's car. And then
which is a really cool shot.
Yeah. She starts to hear like whimpering and kind of walks up, and she's like, he's on the ground or on the floor. And you see his back, and you then start to hear like screaming. And we know what's happening because it was the end of the last episode.
Yeah. He's saying the whole just lie still, it'll be over with. And for a second, when, you know, you start hearing Heather scream and stuff, Billy senses something, or the possessed Billy senses something, and he turns around, and for a fraction of a second, he almost thinks he sees like Elle there.
Yeah.
And that's what kind of jolts her with the screams out of the void. Her nose is bleeding. She's actually scared to death. And Max is going, what's wrong? What's wrong? And then we pan out to the credits.
And then after the credits, it's like what I was talking about with the storm brewing.
Yeah.
And the clouds.
Which,
and
really, Ted, you're going to mow the lawn then?
I mean, I guess it had to happen, you know? He had to get it done before the big storm.
I guess so, but...
Bad energy.
Yeah, you know, that's all I'm saying with his... He was struggling to keep that rain jacket on, by the way. Yeah. That was killing me.
But this whole episode is like rain, storms, lightning. Yeah. It's very cool because it's a little bit of a contrast to the previous two episodes where it was like the bright summer vibes.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's still summery because, you know... That happens sometimes in the summer. You get a stormy summer day. Like, so it was still summery in that way, but it was a lot darker. And
yeah, I think the symbolism of the rain, it's like it's building and it's building to something really bad happening. Like the storm's looming.
Yeah.
So we go to the basement and basically like Lucas and Mike have nursed the fact that they've been broken up with a ton of junk food. So they're passed out. And Will is giving it his all. He is dressed as Will the Wise. I don't know where he got that outfit, but he has it with a wizard staff.
I mean, it was probably another Joyce Byers original. Like,
yeah,
there might
definitely
have been a pattern or something, you know, like at the fabric stores, they would sell like the costume patterns. That's what my mom used to get.
He was feeling it. Like, I don't know. I think your mom should make us Will the Wise costumes and we just rock them because that hat was everything. And I love that he has like mystical medieval music playing.
Yeah.
And he's like,
setting the tone.
Of villagers, you know, they need
of
your
destiny.
Help. And literally, Mike and Lucas are half awake. They're like, come on, it's so early. And he's like, is it early, Mike? And Lucas kind of says,
no, he calls him Michael, which I thought
Michael
was really funny. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He was not putting up with this. He was fucking done.
I know.
Which I'm always like, it's such a shame he moved away because he would have loved Eddie Munson because
he was
into it.
Yeah.
And
also, I have seen into the future and I have seen a day free of girls.
I love the blooper where he's like, I've seen a day full of girls. Like, so classic. But literally, Lucas is like all of us. He's like, can I take a shower first? And I love this transition to Hopper waking up to probably like a Four Loko kind of hangover. Like, I don't drink wine anymore because wine will dry you out. I have had some of the worst hangovers of my life. Like, I'm talking, I would buy Walmart wine. Not good stuff. I'd buy four bottles and me and my sister would kill them in one night. And the next day you feel like a corpse. And I love that literally he's like drinking the shower water. Man is not doing good. He walks out in his towel, just total dad bod. And I love that he takes the aspirin and he just like throws it to the table and goes to the fridge and taped. Notice that there's not a magnet holding it. Taped to the fridge is a note from Elle saying that she's sleeping over Max's, and he takes the milk and he just like drinks it straight from the carton. Man is not doing good, but who comes knocking on his door?
So he gets a knock on the door and it's Joyce, and he is not happy with her.
No.
Like, he's like, I have not been stood up like that in what since whatever grade. Like, he is not really hearing her because he's like mad at her for standing him up the night before.
I'm sorry, Alice Gilbert in the ninth grade screwed him up. So the fact that this happened, unacceptable.
Yeah. But she's trying to tell him about the whole magnets. She like brings the magnets, is trying to put them on the fridge. They're not working. She's like, don't you remember tripping over these? He's like, yeah. She tells him about how she went to see Scott Clark, and he's like, okay.
Is he single? He's brilliant. He's really brilliant.
The whole, like, continuing jokes about Scott Clark throughout the rest of this season are
it's
fantastic.
It's so classic. And I just love how pissed he is. And, like, I know a lot of people got kind of mad at the bickering between the two of them, but I found it, like, just such great comedic relief.
Yeah.
That, like, first of all, he towers over her, and she's like a little spitfire. Like, only Joyce would become fixated on something that's actually really important.
Right.
Nobody else would have noticed this but her. And they've even said in the past, they've alluded that, like, she does get manic, and she does kind of go into these episodes, but she actually got a hunch on something really important. And I love that she tells tells him, you know, Scott explained to me that something that could make this big of a magnetic force, it would take funding, it would take scientists, it would take billions of dollars. What if it's them?
Right.
And I love that he like right away goes into the other room and he's like, I think you're just scared of moving on because God forbid if we move on, wouldn't it, Joyce? And I'm sorry, that bathroom, there's no door. It's just a curtain.
Yeah.
My worst nightmare, Megan. Are you kidding me? People can hear me in the kitchen and in the living room. No, unacceptable. Hopper, build a goddamn door. But I love that he doesn't get a response. And he goes outside and he's like trying to put his shoes on. And Joyce has grabbed like bolt cutters and a flashlight. She's like, I'm going to need to borrow these because she wants to go back to the lab.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, that was hilarious when he's like going on and on with this rant and he thinks that she's talking to him or that he's talking to her and she's already gone. She's out in the shed.
Wouldn't it, Joyce? Huh?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it, Joyce?
But okay, we
good drinking game.
Yeah.
Every time he says, wouldn't it, Joyce, take a shot.
We cut back to Elle and Max and they're walking to Max's house.
Storm is a brewing too.
Yeah. They're looking for kind of clues to what might be going on with Billy because of what Al saw. And they go in his room. You kind of get some interesting things.
First of all, a lot of people have clocked the lock on the door. It wasn't there in season two, but now there's one on the outside, which you can use your imagination. Maybe Neil does try to lock Billy in. I mean, the windows look like he'd be okay to get out of, but it looks like there is now a lock on the outside of the door, which is unsettling. I mean, literally, like, it's just a typical guy's room, like, just gross. And I love Max when she finds the Penthouse and the Hustler magazine. She goes, ugh, gag me with a spoon, just doing that Valley Girl talk.
Yeah.
And they go to the bathroom. What do they find in the bathroom, Megan?
So there's ice bags in the bath, and, like, the bath is full, so it looks like somebody was taking an ice bath. And Max is like, you know, it's probably just for his muscles. He works out like a maniac.
The polar plunge before the polar plunge. Yep.
And then then Elle notices that there's blood on the cabinet door, like under the sink. And so she opens it up and in the trash can is a little fanny pack from a lifeguard.
Yep.
And a whistle. Which,
Billy, there's blood on the whistle. There's blood on the cabinet. CSI Hawkins is going to get your ass.
Yeah.
And I did forget to mention that when they are headed to the house, Max is trying to explain, well, sometimes when Billy's with a girl, they do scream. Mm-hmm. And she's like, they scream? And she's like, yeah, but they're like happy screams.
They're like good right screams.
Away. Yeah, and you just hear, I'll go, what? She goes, I'll just let you borrow my mom's Cosmo. Like, so adorable, because the happy screams bit does come back later on. So yeah, they found the stuff. Now, back in the dark room, I'm sorry. Jonathan, like, he's all of us. He's like, okay, we got some blurry photos of some rats. You're really going to present this to the boss and all the guys, which, first of all, foul. She should have done it one-on-one with him.
Yeah.
With Tom, not with the whole crew.
Yeah.
Jake Busey will rip you apart.
Yeah.
He's the John Rickles of the Hawkins Post. And she right away is like, you are your mother's son. You worried too much, which... she gets a little cocky, which sucks, and we basically watch her get torn to shreds when they're like, Mrs. Driscoll, like, literally is, like, a fanatic. She lies a lot. She makes up stories. This is nothing. And they all kind of laugh in her face, and Tom kind of at first, like, baits her a little bit, like, oh, I could see this being a book. And you just see, like, Nancy light up, and right away he goes, the Nancy Drew mystery. Right away, shotting her down. They're all laughing. And he's like, just do what you're paid to do. Answer the phones.
Yeah.
This is where we rip to shreds.
Yeah. And this is where we find out that that other places have reported that things are missing, like chemicals, fertilizer, diesel fuel. Like, so we are kind of building our knowledge of this mystery also.
Yeah. There is something with it. But, like, right away, we're going to find out later, Nancy kind of thinks of what obviously they should have brought with them. But if you actually weren't being an asshole and you listened, yeah, there are a lot of, you know, businesses that chemicals, fertilizer, things are reported missing, or it's been like eaten up. What's causing this?
Yeah.
But the boys are, you know, being in the boys' club, and they laugh her off. And poor Jonathan is like, it's okay, Nancy. She kind of hurries out of the room.
We get back to the mall. So we are at Scoops Ahoy, and Erica and her friends are back for some more samples. But Robin is a little distracted with her translating, which she's gotten some more of the code. You like find out that she has gotten like the next line. But she tells Erica that, that she's taking advantage of their company policy. And that
where's the sailor man?
She can't have any more samples. And yeah, Erica wants the sailor man. And Robin says he's busy, that he can't help her right now, and that he's busy with spycraft.
Great spies like us reference, like just so good. And I just love that song playing where you literally just see him and it's the shot of him spying. And it's just, it's so goddamn good. It's set to the song, Things Can Only Get Better. And it's just so good that they're behind a plant.
Yeah, they the probably look ridiculous. Like, anybody can see them. Like, I just keep picturing, like, how ridiculous they look standing there behind this plant. There's people on that side of the plant, too, that can see them.
They didn't really do a great job, like, scoping out the place. And I love that right away. He's like, what am I looking for? And he's like, well, an evil Russian, like blonde hair, earpiece, tracksuit, duffel bag, like long before Die Hard, these references were fucking hitting. And right away, I love that, you know, he's like with his binoculars and he looks up. And if memory serves me correctly, the girl up on the balcony in front of the theater, it's the girl that like denied him the date in the first episode.
Yeah, the girl who was going to Purdue. I'm pretty sure that's who it was.
Yeah, it was Mark Lewinsky talking to her.
Right. I forget who the girl's name was, but Mark Lewinsky, who never even got off the bench.
Yeah. Talk about standards. And literally, he's just kind of like pissed. And I love that, like, I don't know. Like, first of all, the lip gloss was glossing in this episode. I don't care what people say. Joe Keery had, like, lip gloss on in that scene.
Yeah.
Those lips are not that pink.
He's our baby girl.
He's our baby girl. And literally, I love that Dustin kind of is like, I don't know why you're looking at other girls. You have the perfect one right in front of you. And he's like, I swear to God, if you say Robin, right away Dustin's like, Robin, Robin, Robin. And I really do like the scene because for first-time watchers, you're kind of on Dustin's side. You're like, yeah, she's cool as shit. And he's like, you know, she's really smart and stuff. She's funny. And right away, Steve's like, she's not even in the ballpark of my type.
Yeah, and he's listing all of the reasons why that she's not his type. Like,
which did you notice when he goes, she's hyper? I don't like that. Now, none of us have witnessed her being hyper yet. You see a little of frantic, nervous energy in the last episode. But you don't see her rambling. She's almost like playing it cool. And the way I kind of looked at the Robin character was probably undiagnosed ADHD, who knows? And she probably does get manic and frantic. But I think the whole like dry, sarcastic, kind of almost like bitchiness is her walls up. She's got her defenses on. She's been working with Steve for probably over a month or so. They've always gotten their shifts together. So I think like what we don't see is stuff that Steve sees. The walls have lowered. She's comfortable with him a little bit. So maybe she does show that nervous, frantic energy that we see in season four. She kind of like is able to lower the walls. But I love that he's like, she's in theater. That's a bad look. She's in the band. And kind of Dustin's like, you're out of high school now. Why do you care what people think?
Right. And he's saying like that he shouldn't care about popularity, he should find someone who he enjoys being around, like him and Susie, which I love Steve coming back and saying like, well, whose advice got you this girlfriend that's hotter than Phoebe Cates? So
listening to me, pea brain. And it's just, it's a really cute like scene. It's kind of showing the older brother, younger brother kind of aspect that they have, their little bickering banter. But Dustin does have some solid advice for him, so they continue looking.
Yeah.
And we cut back to the story sky and Will's basement. Music is going.
Mike's basement. Will is, but yes.
Mike's basement. Mike is literally, Mike and Lewis, they're white knuckling it. They are not into this campaign. Will is giving it his all. He is really trying to be theatrical, trying to get them into it, but they're being kind of sarcastic. They're really not into it. And what happens?
So I was also trying to look for some symbolism in this campaign that Will put together because...
The juju zombies?
Well, you could tell that it was kind of reflecting what was actually happening in Hawkins right now, because it's like villagers that are under this threat of from this evil force is what they're, he's kind of saying. And then the juju zombies are coming, which we do get zombies in this this season. And I looked up what juju zombies were, and apparently they're like super strong zombies that like have kind of retained their skills and like abilities of when they were alive, and
they like the
also
Bob from Day of the Dead connections. Boom.
They're aware of their undead state and want to destroy people. So that's like
damn good for you, Megan.
Yeah. So you know, like zombies are typically like mindless. Like juju zombies are like more powerful zombies. So.
Well, there is, because I will never recommend this movie to you, you will gag, but in Day of the Dead, the movie that they see, there is a whole subplot where there is a zombie which one of the scientists is like, he remembers being human, and they give him objects like a Walkman, and he's able to put it on and listen to music, and he actually can communicate and talk a little bit, and they're like, yeah, there's actually still a mind in there, and that's a huge subplot of Day of the Dead, which was a huge theme for this season.
For this season.
Look at you with your research, Megan.
Yeah. So, I mean,
blue ribbon.
It was, like you said, they weren't taking Will's campaign very seriously, though. And when the phone rings, they kind of jump to answer it because they think maybe it's Elle, maybe Elle and Max.
Telemarketers? What the fuck?
I don't know. And Lucas is like, well, maybe we could call them. And Mike's like, we could do that. And he's like, what would we even say? Like, maybe try apologizing, Mike. Come on.
Yeah, yeah.
But Will gets really angry. So he's not happy. He's like, I planned this whole campaign. What he really gets him upset is he tries to get them to come back, and Mike comes up with like this plan, and he's like,
this
set ourselves on fire, sacrifice ourselves, save the villagers. It's over. And I mean, I would be pissed too if I was Will in this situation.
Yeah, like right away, you hurried through this campaign that he put his heart into, and that's when he's just like, that's it, I'm going home.
Yeah, so he leaves. This is a very like emotional scene here, and we've got the rain, we've got some really cool cinematography
pouring out. And do you notice they're in the carport, the same carport from season one when he goes the Demogorgon? He got me.
Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people have like looked into like parallels of this scene to like other like media and just how like powerful it is, kind of, and it's like a pivotal moment, I think, for like Will and Mike's relationship. And there's that really like potent line with Mike telling Will, it's not my fault that you don't like girls, and just the look on Will's face, like
that looks like it
hits it hard. Yeah,
and I love that Will's like, listen, and you kind of do see Will's logic. He's like, listen, you know, like, because right away he gets defensive when Will is like, sorry that you want to, like, you know, spend all your time swapping spit with some stupid girl. And that's when he lashes out at him. But he's like, he kind of realizes he went too far. And he's like, listen, did you think we were just going to stay in my basement and play games for the rest of our life? And I feel like Will, even though he was only in the Upside Down for a week, that probably felt like an eternity. I feel like he's like kind of, and obviously what he's going through in his head, you know, he's very confused. He hasn't matured as fast as the other boys. He still wants to stick to the good old days when things were innocent and they were still the party. And obviously, like, later on, we find out that he does have feelings for Will, and that's very confusing and scary
for
him.
Yeah.
I keep seeing Will.
Yeah.
For Mike. And you can just tell that he's going through a lot right now. And it's kind of like this internal struggle. And he just kind of is like, yeah, I think, you know, I guess I did. I thought we were just going to stay and play games the rest of my life. And he's so goddamn hurt. He gets on his bike and he rides off into the pouring rain. Your heart feels ripped out when you watch this. It sucks.
And we're getting into some of these really cool transitions. We've got a lot more in this episode, but with the rain pouring down outside the carport, and then it transitions to the rain on the pool.
Everyone is out of the pool because, you know, there could be a lightning strike. That used to be a huge thing when I would. My mom was terrified of lightning. I don't know if your mom was.
Well,
but
you really can't swim when there's lightning. Like, it is.
Anytime there was lightning, get the F out of the pool. And then my mom would make us stand in the hallway away from all the, like, sockets, the light sockets. She must have been struck by lightning once when she was younger, because this woman literally would be like, you can't even stand in front of the TV. It will explode and kill you. So me and Alexis, my sister, had to stand in the hallway as kids until the lightning storm ended.
Yeah.
It was so ridiculous.
I don't really know if this is true, but, like, I feel like my parents told me we couldn't take a shower while it was lightning.
Yeah. I heard the safest place is to be in your car because the rubber wheels. That's what I heard. But
yeah,
literally, like,
know.
My dad didn't give a fuck. He'd put it on the TV. She'd be like, Roger, you're going to kill us all. So the lightning thing made me laugh that everyone's out of there. And both Max and Al, which I love their mustard and ketchup rain slickers.
Yeah.
Like, well, where the hell did they get those? They show up to the manager who, hello, hi, manager.
Yeah, he was a cutie.
Oh, my God. He's kind of a dick, but, you know,
yeah.
That's my taste. And there's another lifeguard girl, literally sipping on her Diet Coke. And they show the fanny pack, and they're like, oh, you know, he's like, oh, yeah, that's Heather's. And right away, he says something like, oh, her and Billy bailed on me today. What happens in that scene?
Yeah, that's Heather's. I'll get it back to her. And then Max is like, well, we could give it back to her. And he's like, no, she's not here. She bailed on me today. She didn't come in. So then Elle notices, like, a little bulletin board with the photos of all the lifeguards.
That was awesome because there is a little Easter egg. There's a lifeguard named Freddie. And we know, which I don't know, like, I want you to watch 1 and 3 because you'll literally see all the parallels with Stranger Things. But it's a horror movie. We'll see how you can take it. But there's Freddy Krueger. And Heather is played by Heather Langenkamp, who plays Nancy in the original Nightmare on Elm Street. So it's pretty funny, Heather, Freddy, and the bulletin board. And what does Elle do once she gets access to this photo?
Right. So she takes the photo of Heather, and then she realizes, oh, she can use her powers to go look for her. So they go in the locker room. Max turns on all the showers, and Elle puts, like, duct tape over, like, some goggles to act as a blindfold, I guess. And she goes in to look for her. And I thought the, like, cinematography here was cool, too, because
so
it's, like,
cool.
First she sees the mailbox. And
which
then
the address is 1438 in Nightmare on Elm Street. It's 1428.
Oh, there you go.
And it has a red door on the
house. So is that,
house.
Like, a connection, too?
Huge, yep.
Okay. So the red door, then they go in, she goes through the door, and there's a bathtub full of ice.
Oh, this was cool, yeah.
And then, so Heather kind of, like, comes up through the ice and says, help me. And then she's pulled back under, and then Elle is, like, pulled under, and it's like she's, like, being pulled
Such
down.
Such a cool shot of her underwater screaming down at Heather, who gets pulled into this, like, black abyss. And there is a scene from the original Nightmare on Elm Street where the girl falls asleep in the bathtub and Freddy pulls her down the drain. And the way they filmed it was so cool. Really, they filmed it in a pool, but it's almost like it's her, like, trying to, you know, her hands are popping out of the tub. She's screaming, and then she eventually wakes up. I think we're going to have a viewing of these movies so you can appreciate them. But I love that jolts Elle out of it. She pulls the, you know, the goggles off. Yet again, hyperventilating. This can't be too good for her. Like,
yeah,
it really can't be.
No. And, because it was almost like she was drowning, too. But the rain continues to come down as Hopper and Joyce get to the lab.
Oh,
and it's
this scene.
Funny, because I feel like this is the lab that I was picturing when we were on Cubby and Hannah's podcast, and I had to pick my activity, and I said I was going to ride bikes.
Explore the lab.
I was picturing this, like, abandoned lab, like, because I don't know why. This is the lab that I was picturing. Because I
you're
feel like
sick in the head.
We're in season 3, so I don't know. But Anyway, they go into the lab and they're in the lobby where Bob died, and she has flashbacks. And I was like, why? Why are you making us watch Sean Astin die again? Like, they just like had to put that scene in there.
That
as
was
a flashback.
Heart-wrenching.
And I was like, if they fucking do this in season 5 with Eddie's death and make us watch it again, I'm going to be so fucking angry. And I feel like they're going to.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not going to be happy, but it is what it is. But this is a, then they're like walking down the lab, and this is another really cool transition. I don't know if you caught it. So there's security cameras in the lab that you can see kind of turn on and start tracking them. And they're like, they look into the lens of the security camera and it transitions to the lens of the binoculars back
How
at the
cool
mall.
How cool was that?
Yeah, that was like one of the best transitions, I think. That's on par with like the one, is it in season 2 with like or maybe season 1, back to season 1 with like the dark room light, and it's like the transition of like the light bulb to the dark room light. That was like one of my favorite ones from season 1, and it's funny because I think that was a Sean Levy episode, and this was also a Sean Levy episode. I noticed that at the beginning. So
I would love to sit down with them and literally be like, what? Like, how does your creative process work? Because it's just not cuts. It's these beautiful transitions from one object to another. It's literally like artwork, you know, just to blow smoke up their ass. But it really is beautifully, beautifully filmed. So we see Steve. He's got the binoculars. And what does he clock?
So Dustin's actually looking through the binoculars right now because he has taken them away from Steve in the first scene. Which is really funny when he starts pulling them and they're like around Steve's neck. But so Dustin sees this, what he thinks is an evil Russian. This
literally
blonde
has
guy.
Literally blonde tracksuit and
duffel bag. Yeah.
And I love that they're like evil Russian. And it's played by one of the bullies from Hocus Pocus. It's not the guy Ice. It's the guy who points to him with the blonde hair. So that made me die. And them trailing him. They did the worst fucking job in the world.
Awful.
Like, Steve gets bumped into and called a dickwad, which kills me. And then I love Dustin on the telephone at the payphone. Hello, how are you? I'm fine.
They're not stealthy at all. Steve,
nope, not
you
like
are
a ninja.
Not like a ninja.
Nope. And what do they end up seeing, Megan?
The evil Russian ends up going in and... In that duffel bag is a huge boom box because he is a jazzercise instructor.
He's ready to sweat, okay?
And just their faces as they're watching the people start doing the jazzercise.
It's both horror and curiosity mixed into one, but their facial expressions kill me. And it's played by Wham, too, so that really makes the scene. It's fantastic. Yeah.
But downstairs, Robin is sitting there still doing her translating, and she gets a knock on the back employee door, and it's a delivery. And the delivery person is wearing this uniform that says Lynx, and she has some light bulbs and like a light bulb moment and realizes that the Lynx is a silver cat, which is
the
back of the
feeds.
Uniform. And she basically cracks the code as the boys come walking back into the ice cream shop. Steve is like, Robin, you'll never guess who Dustin thought was an evil Russian. Dustin's like, you thought so too. And Robin just ignores them. And she runs out into the food court. And she's like standing on a table, I think, like... They're not discreet, but she's like looking around and she's looking for a trip to China. Sounds nice. She clocks the Chinese food restaurant. If you tread lightly, Kaufman shoes. And then she realizes that the blue meets yellow in the West is the clock, because one hand is blue, one hand is yellow. And at 8:45, they will both meet in the West. So
I would never... in a million years get that. And I love that Dustin and Steve are like, they come over and they're like, Robin, what's up? And she's like, I cracked it. I cracked the code.
Yeah.
Just so dramatic, but so well done.
I feel like, obviously, like, I mean, the Scoops trip is like my favorite thing about season three, but like, especially in this episode, this like storyline in this episode is so entertaining, especially like the stuff that we haven't even gotten to yet. So
the pricks at the newspaper are having a really good time taunting poor Nancy. Nancy is trying to get coffee for somebody. And when she opens the cabinet, they have a rubber rat literally taped to the inside. And Jake Busey is loving this. He is just, they are cracking up. They're like, watch out, Nancy Drew. And she gets a light bulb moment and right away runs into the dark room. Poor Jonathan can never develop those photos. And she's like, we'll bring proof. We'll actually go back to Miss Drisco's house and we'll get the rat that was kibbing. Now, mind you, they don't know that the rat is now donut jelly because they left right before that happened. And she's like, no, literally, we'll go and we'll get the rat. And Jonathan's there. You're like, I don't know about this. And she's like, nope, this will literally show them. So, you know.
Yeah. Then we're at the lab. And I really like the lightning strike over the lab.
Yes.
That was a cool shot. But this is probably like the most like tender scene in the episode because Joyce and Hopper are just kind of walking through the lab. They end up getting to like the big room where the gate had been, and Hopper shows her that it's been filled in, but she has some like flashbacks to like Will being in the Upside Down. But then we get her saying that she feels like she's losing her mind, which Hopper also agrees. And I feel like that was kind of a cool little like callback in season four when Chrissy and Eddie are kind of talking about feeling like they're losing their mind. But Hopper is telling Joyce that he wants her to feel like she can still live in Hawkins because she's like, he's like, did you think I wouldn't find out? He's like, Gary called me. He says he's doing work on your house to put it on the market. Like, so he kind of knows, and you can kind of infer that he's kind of known this whole time that
she's planning on leaving.
And he's like, did the kids know yet? She says no. And he says that he understands because like when Sarah died, he had to get away, but that Joyce has something that he never had because she has people here who know what she has gone through, like meaning him, but
yeah.
Joyce's little attempted joke here.
Like Scott Clark kills me.
Yeah, and literally kills me. Like, but he doesn't really get a chance to react to it because then they hear like a noise and start like trying to figure out what
happened. It almost sounds like a
happened.
Door, and I love the shot of Hopper like taking the safety off his gun. You see the shadow of it. That was a cool shot.
So then we've got Lucas and Mike. So where do they show up at?
They biked in the pouring rain and they're hammering on the front door to Will's house, literally, you know, apologizing, saying how sorry they are. But little do they know, Will is actually out back and he's in Castle Byers. And this scene rips my heart out because just between the music and Noah's acting, where he looks at the photos of them when they were little, them in their Ghostbusters uniforms. And I love the flashbacks of the very first campaign that we saw them. They look like babies in it.
Yeah.
And he just starts muttering like, so stupid, so stupid. And he starts ripping the photographs and the drawings that he made. And it's almost like symbolic that he's almost like destroying the last bit of like innocence and childhood that he had. And he starts destroying Castle Byers, which watching that get destroyed just rips your heart out because you remember how important it was to him. And it's such a tough scene to watch.
And we know that Castle Byers is going to play a role in season five as well. So I feel like this is definitely going to come back. But Nancy and Jonathan get to Miss Driscoll's house and she doesn't answer the door. So Nancy decides to just go in and Jonathan's like not into this plan, but she's like, maybe she fell or something.
Maybe she's out and she's like, she's an elderly woman and it's in the middle of a storm. Where would she be?
So she was right. They go downstairs into the basement and Mrs. Driscoll is eating the fertilizer. So
yeah, gross. Not looking too good. Like, what the fuck? That's a total what the fuck moment. So we go back to the mall. It's still pouring out.
Yeah.
Somehow the three of them have gotten up on the roof. Which
right.
We got to see
I
that
like
roof.
The shot of the clock, though, because we yes. see the hands that have met at this time.
And they have the binoculars and they're watching. And you see, like, behind the mall, there's guys with machine guns.
Yeah.
And there's boxes of what's supposed to be Chinese food. But right away, Dustin's like, it could be anything. It could be chemicals. It could be weapons. It could be bombs. And Steve's like, soaked to the bone. He's like, that's great. That's great. What happens?
Yeah, and I love that Steve is wearing like his. This is like the one time
his
he gets
members only
his
jacket.
Members only jacket over his Scoops Ahoy uniform. But no. Steve and Dustin start fighting over the binoculars again, and they kind of like make noise.
A noise,
and the guards hear them, and so they get down real quick. But then like Steve and Robin like grab each other's hands.
Which
and
for the first time viewers, you literally are kicking your feet like a teenage girl. You're
yeah.
like, aw. And they kind of realize and they awkwardly let go. But you saw it was just an impulse thing for comfort. But
right.
like first time viewers, you were fucking rooting. You were
yeah.
into this.
But like also still now watching it and just seeing like even because what their friendship has become is like so special to me. Like,
yeah.
And like just seeing that like how comfortable they are with each other and like
yeah.
they are like those platonic soulmates and like
they really are like brother
awkward
and sister
about it right
yeah.
now because it's like they're not at that level yet but like they are gonna like grab for each other like they're each other's like emotional support person so
that's why like in season 4 when the Vines get Robin the first thing she screams is Steve like that's like her brother you know so just it's so cute to see those two together. Especially see their relationship develop. So, and I like that they hear the guards speaking in Russian. And right away, Robin's like, I think we found your Russians. Because after the noise, they're smart enough to get the fuck out of
right.
Dodge.
Because the
and
guard comes up on the roof
and checks
and sees that they're gone and they've already gotten inside. Thank goodness. Well, at the lab, Hopper's kind of following behind someone, but then, like, he's suddenly attacked by Grigori and Joyce is kind of like calling for him, but Grigori has like gotten him down. So she finds him knocked out and she sees the motorcycle riding away. And luckily, I think she clocks the license plate on the
I would have never remembered.
Yeah. On the motorcycle. But again, another really cool transition because we've got the motorcycle riding away with the light on the license plate. And then it's like transitions to the light on Max and Elle's bike
which
as
is
they're
cool.
riding. Yeah.
Yeah. Yet again, in the mustard and ketchup, slickers, rain slickers. And it just reminds me of What About Bob? He can borrow my slicker. If you get it, you get it. And they go to Heather's house and Elle uses her power to just open the door. And we then see Tom, who is Nancy's boss at the newspaper. He is Heather's dad. So we see that in the family portrait. And they come into the most bizarre scene. Like,
so
the record
creepy.
Player is playing. It's supposed to look cozy, but like you said, there is an ambiance against it. There is creepiness. There is Heather's parents. Billy is just charming the hell out of Heather's mom and stuff. They're laughing. They're having dinner. And right away, they just like look so confused because there's two young girls dripping wet on their carpet. And what happens?
Well, Billy kind of stands up and he's like, Max, like, what are you doing here? And,
Maxine.
Yeah. He introduces Max to Heather's family.
Do you notice he says sister too? He doesn't say
yeah,
stepsister.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's very off. Like everything's off about it. But Max and Elle, they kind of like come up with a story. They're like, oh, we went to the pool and found out that you and Heather didn't come into work. So we were worried and wanted to check on you.
Mm-hmm.
So
where is she?
Yeah. Yeah.
Where is who? And I love that at that exact moment, Heather comes in with a tray of cookies. She burnt some. They all looked
right.
fine to me.
Yeah.
And literally, Billy is just going, oh, well, she had a bit of a fever and I nursed her back to health. Like, how Heather's parents are like, what the hell's going on? And she's right as rain. And I love that. And I think a lot of this might have been the Duffers or Jeannie Campbell Bauer, how the mannerisms and the body language with Billy, him holding his hands, the way he's postured, the way he talks, it's Vecna, 100%. Yeah. When you rewatch it and you know who's behind all this, it's Vecna. And I love that he clearly knows who Eleven is. And he's like, right. I'm sorry, who are you? And when she says L, like, he gets it. And he's like, L. And it's just, it's so goddamn fucking creepy.
Right. And then him watching them leave is like,
oh my God,
like insanely creepy, because they're just like going out onto their bikes and Billy's just watching out the side window of the door and having this flashback to Elle closing the gate. And I think that, like you said, I think he knew a little bit who she was, but like, this is where he really made like the connection.
The connection.
Yeah.
And you just see like his pupils. That's such a really cool shot. And you see Will at the destroyed Castle Byers right away, feel it on the back of his neck, so you know that there's some link.
Right.
And right away, like for the first time ever, you see this possessed, this flayed Billy actually look scared, because he knows what Elle is capable of.
And Lucas and Mike kind of find Will. Like, you don't see them, but like, you hear them like, Will, are you okay? And Will's like, he's back.
He's
like,
back.
Which, that. Whoo, so creepy. And then, like,
this is probably one of my favorite endings.
Yes.
Because
American Pie on the
American Pie is playing, which almost every Thanksgiving, I do this as a tradition with my brother-in-law, we get wasted. And then we try to see who can sing every lyric of American Pie without messing up.
I can do it. So I can do this competition.
We are going to be doing this for a Patreon one day. And after a few cans of, you know, salsa, we're going to make sure she does it, because I always mess up. I can never get too far. But it's playing. And right away, you know, Heather's mom is like, I don't like the idea of them, you know, off in the rain. Tom's like, they'll be fine. And she knocks her wine glass over. And right away, Tom being a dick, he's like, told you to take it easy on that wine. She's like, oh, I'm sorry. Just very apologetic. It just makes you sick. And she gets up and she's like, I think I'm going to go lay down. She drops like a sack of potatoes. And right away, Tom's like, oh my God, call 911. And that's when literally shit hits the fan. Like, you know, Heather's mom has been drugged. And then with Tom, basically, Billy and Heather knock him out with a bottle.
Heather is the one that knocks him out. It's crazy.
Like the high heel to the back makes me cringe every time.
Yeah.
And she's right away like, don't worry, daddy. Like, yet again, it'll all be over with. It'll be easier if you don't fight. And they chloroform him. And the last shot, which there's so many memes, like, I hope my phone's not dead. And then it cuts to Billy just looking completely dead. And as this cheery song, which actually is about something very tragic, is playing, it just zooms into Billy's dead expression, just frozen, watching this unfold.
Yeah.
Cut to black.
Yeah. It's insane. Ooh. Crazy ending.
Hell of an episode, but one of my all-time favorite endings. I do love that America Pie continues to play over the
through
credits.
Through the credits. Yeah.
Perfection.
Oh, it's a good episode. And I love like all the references that you kind of pointed out to Nightmare on Elm Street. That was really cool.
Oh, we're having a viewing party. Just you wait.
I'll have to just like, you know.
Buckle up, buttercup.
We'll see how I do. But
yeah.
Yeah, that was fun. Like I said, the vibes are really cool in this episode, and there's just so 100%. Much cool, so much cool cinematography, all of that. So, yeah, loved it, and it was fun to talk about that. Has there been any filming or production updates?
There hasn't really been anything. It's been kind of quiet as of right now. I know that we've seen a few of the stars out and about. We've seen Joseph Quinn, who's at the Oscar Vanity Fair party, and then he was at a Paris fashion show. I know Natalia and Charlie were at a fashion show. Joe's been doing a lot of radio and appearances, promoting, you know, his new album. I know that Finn has released some music.
Oh,
like, they're out and about doing some
Finn
really
has a new
cool
album
projects.
Coming out, too, and his first single came out, but I haven't gotten a chance to listen to it yet. But it
I'm really excited to see his
a little
movie.
Catchy.
That
yeah.
looks good.
Like,
that
summer
looks hilarious.
Camp one, yeah.
Yeah, just such a I don't know, satire on those ridiculous movies. But yeah, as of right now, things have been a little bit quiet. But no, we're just waiting to see if we get a teaser or anything. I mean, I'm dying to see if there's any new merch that comes out. So we're just waiting patiently.
Yeah. So speaking of merch, I think that we are going to do a little unboxing today. So I'm super excited to see what you get in this. And I guess technically we should warn people that this is like spoilers because it's like a mystery box type thing.
Yeah.
If you order it, right? So if you do not want to know what is in this mystery box, then you can skip this merch segment today, but we're gonna watch Stacey unbox, and if you want the video of this, it will be available on Patreon.
So this big shout out to Styling Boxes who released these mystery boxes. Big shout out to Hawkins Reporter. Right away I was like, oh, you got one, I want to see what it's about. So I have had really good self-control. I have gotten this for the last week and a half and I have not touched it. We're unboxing, so let's see.
All right,
first thing, okay, a pen, a Hawkins High pen.
Ooh.
Very, very cool. And I think this thing flips up top. Multicolor pen. Ooh, love that.
I like that a lot. I wonder, are these things that have, like, been released
been out,
already?
That's what I'm
that
wondering.
That pen looks familiar, but, like, actually, I feel like I have a similar pen set, but it's not that same one. So
yeah, because I pretty much can clock merch that's already been out. I was worried that I might get repeats. Just by looking down right now, this looks like new stuff.
Okay, cool.
All right, so I got an upside down Demogorgon keychain.
Oh, I love
very
that.
Very cool. A notebook. This is a like Demogorgon like notebook. Pretty cool.
Oh, and you just bought another notebook.
I know. God damn it. Could I use this? So that's cool.
That is really cool. The slash on the front.
I know. I love that. We got buttons. We got Stranger Things buttons.
Oh, that one in the middle is cute. Is that like
Isn't
the whole fam?
It says, Friends Don't Lie, 11 Team Barb.
Oh.
Stuck in the Upside Down. So yeah, that's the original OG crew.
Cute.
This is a box. So,
ooh, a box within the box.
A box. Oh, I think I got a cup.
Is it a mug?
It's a mug.
I love mugs.
Dude, mornings are for coffee and contemplation.
Oh, that is nice. This is making me want this box.
Dude, I think you might have to order this. This is a good mug. This might go into my mug collection.
I love it. Be like Wayne with your mug collection.
I know, for real. Okay.
I drank coffee out of my Jokiri mug this morning. It was
Did you really?
Lovely.
It just tastes better. This is cool. This is almost like a decorative, I don't know, plate or something. It's got something that you can hang it on a wall.
Okay.
But it's painted really cool, like almost like black light.
I wonder if it would be black light. Like, I feel like it probably would. Like, if you had a black light, it would probably glow pretty cool.
Look at that. It almost looks like they're in the mall and there's the huge Demogorgon like looming over.
Yeah, that's cool artwork.
Oh, this is cool. This is something else I can hang up. This almost looks like, remember those VHSs that like if you tilted them, they kind of
moved? Oh, it's like holographic?
Yep. So this is another thing I can frame. Very cool. Original poster, this artwork. Shout out to Kyle. Amazing.
Oh, it's like 3D almost.
I think this, so this is it, but this is, oh my God. Well, I'll save the best for last.
Two more things.
For stickers.
Oh, those stickers
Look at
are
Will
cool.
the Wise. That's
yeah, that's
us.
The episode we just did. That's so funny.
That's super cute, Mike.
That's season three type outfits, right?
Right?
Yeah.
Oh my God, I love it. And then last but not least, damn, it was upside down.
Oh, the
piggyback poster. My sister and her husband got me this for my birthday about 2 years ago and I framed it up. It is
like
probably
one
of my favorite posters. Huge one.
Yeah.
This is absolutely gorgeous.
I love that.
That's what I got. Stickers, pen, keychains, a lot of artwork, a mug, which is probably
the
my
mug
favorite
is
piece.
Is the best thing in there, I think.
Yeah. So big shout out to Styling Boxes. Like this was really cool. Somebody who collects merch, it was nice to see stuff that I don't typically have. But no, really, really well done and stuff. The quality of the project, so the points. So 5 stars, 100%. styling boxes.
I like that plate thing too.
I know,
that's
right?
That's unique for sure.
But nope, favorite item.
Yeah.
Love my life. Coffee and contemplation.
Yeah. I love that. I love that so much. All right. Well, I think that's our episode today.
Cool. Right? I think that we did pretty good, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like I said, we will be back next week. You can catch our Joe mini episodes. Those are coming out on Mondays.
Yep.
So some of them aren't so mini, like, but we're trying.
We're trying, man. We're trying.
We've had some fun guests, so that's cool. And yeah, just, you know, vibing, working on season 3 as we come into this spring, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Over and out.
Over and out.
Eddie, I'm not sure if I love the idea of you driving.
Oh, I'm starting to suffer. Harrington's got it. Don't you get bored?
I just realized I'm not really prepared for this, but we are back.
We're back. We're back.
We're back for our secret segment. This is our fan fiction, steady mostly segment. So if you're not into fan fiction, turn us off. We'll talk to you next week. Get out of here.
Get out of here.
And if you want to hang out and hear what we've been up to and what we've been reading, feel free to stick around. So
yeah.
I think that you said that you had one thing that you wanted to talk about, and I'm going to pull up the ones that I want to talk about while you're doing that.
Okay, so I decided to catch up with Prism by Onion Chiver, which I ordered 2 more of their candles. I ordered the Scoops Ahoy Steve candle and the Eddie candle that will go along with Prism. I'm going to try not to burn them. I lit the Steve one for like a second to take a picture, but they're just, I don't know, they really know how to set the mood with the ambiance and stuff, so I ordered 2 more candles from them. Very excited. But I did read the latest episode, the latest chapter, and a lot of triggers ahead of time, guys. This is a very, did you read it?
No, I haven't. I'm not caught up on Prism, so don't spoil it for me.
It is very, very dark. Some shit happens that literally makes you go, and it's an intense, sad, violent, triggering, emotional ride of an episode, and the way it ended, I did not expect it. Our boys are fine in a way, but there is such a cliffhanger and such a twist at the end that literally I almost texted you, and I almost spoiled it. Like, it's that intense of a twist. So yeah. Please, Megan.
Please don't spoil it. But also that makes me want to put it off even longer because I don't want a cliffhanger. So
like literally, no, like you need to.
I'll get around to it, I guess.
Yeah.
I've mostly just been reading one shots. So I have to shout out my friend Amy. She has a Discord server for like steady stuff, and I was just like really needing some good one-shot recommendations. And I went in like the recommendation channel in her server, and mm-hmm. like some people had some really great recommendations the past week or so. So I mostly all of these came from there. Oh, I don't know if this one came from there or if I just found it myself, but this was a fun little one-shot called Moving in Stereo by Spicy Sharks.
Ooh.
And it's basically like, you know that song Moving in Stereo, like
by
I think
Cars,
it's the Cars,
yeah.
Yeah, which is in season 3, right?
Mm-hmm.
With like Billy, but it's basically like Eddie is like watching Steve in the pool, and Steve gets out of the pool, and then some stuff happens, but it's basically like, you know, Steve was trying to seduce him through like his song choices. So
yeah, you're gonna have to send that to me. Yep. Yep.
It's really good. But then there was another one that was called I Could Show You How. This was by Personalize.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And the summary starts, "I used to give Nancy massages," Steve says. So they're hanging out in Eddie's room, and Steve basically wants to give Eddie a massage because Eddie has like messed up his back and it hurts really bad. And then they both are just kind of like figuring out that they're into it, sort of. So it's very soft and slow, and
you're
like good
be sending
vibes.
So many links.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah. These are really good. I'm telling you, I read a lot of good ones. That one was a recommendation from the server for sure. And there's like, if you're not like, I don't know who. Maybe there's people listening who are not into the smut, but it's nice because this one, the first chapter, you could really read it on its own without the smut, and then it's very tender and emotional. And then if you want to read the second chapter, you get into it. Another one, somebody has to arrange the matches. So this one was by, this is why I said I wasn't prepared.
You're doing great.
Efkin Kinda Gauche. It's spelled F-K-I-N Kinda G-A-U-C-H-E. That was
sounds great. Yep.
Basically, Eddie comes out to Dustin because Dustin has been like obsessed with finding Eddie a girlfriend. And so basically, very quickly, Dustin's like, okay, well, we have to find you a boyfriend. And we go from there. That one was really cute and funny. Another one, this was like a similar vibe. It's called Out Loud by Queer We Are.
Okay.
And at the very beginning of the story, Eddie is selling drugs in his trailer to this guy, and they start to sort of hook up, and Steve walks in on them, and then they like both can't really stop thinking about it. So yeah, that one was good.
That sounds great, yeah.
Another one was called Don't Hate the Player. And
Hate the Game.
All of these were so good. I feel like I didn't sell the last one very well, but it's really good. Mm. Don't Hate the Player, whoever the author was has like abandoned the fic, so it just says orphan account. So that's like on AO3 if like the author decides to like not have their name associated with the fic anymore. It just says orphan account as the author. So I don't know who wrote this originally, and they, but like instead of deleting it from AO3, they can leave it up. They can leave it up, and it's called like orphaning the fic. So yeah. It was really good though. And I don't know if you, I feel like you never read the one that I recommended where Steve ends up playing this video game and like falling in love with Eddie, and they don't really know who each other are. Like,
shit, I meant to read. Oh yeah,
that's really good.
So much stuff. Yeah.
And I don't even understand why. Like, because I have never really been a gamer or into video games, but for some reason, like, I'm really into like
they
them.
Sold it.
Yeah, or like Eddie and Steve being gamers. Like, I don't know why that like appeals to me, but
I
like,
dig it. Yeah.
So the summary for this one kind of is good because it says Steve Harrington doesn't really play video games, not his thing. Somehow, however, he's ended up in an utterly delusional, one-sided relationship with an NPC, which is non-playable character, which I only really know because of Free Guy. Like,
bye.
Because, yeah.
Connections.
But, yeah. So basically he like falls in love with this like video game character, and it's not even like a person in the video game. It's just like a character in the game. So, or so he thinks. So it's really clever, like the storyline behind this. And that one's a modern AU too. So, okay. This is a long list, but I only have one more. And the last one is one that you just discovered and sent to me, but I don't think you've started it yet. And it's called Whiskey, Cigarettes, and Other Things That Burn.
Yes. Yep.
By Day 842. And I just started this last night, but I'm like probably like sixth of the way into it. So it's really good. There's two chapters so far, but it's going to be an ongoing story. And basically, it's post-canon, everything that happened, and Eddie has really kind of let himself go, and he's gotten really into like drugs and drinking, and he's living out in Indianapolis because he's supposedly dead, so he can't come back to Hawkins.
Damn.
And Robin really is trying to like be a good friend and like take care of him, but yeah. Steve is just like not into it. He's like, Eddie's just being toxic, like I'm not gonna feed into this. But like,
yeah.
He ends up going with Robin to visit him, and basically I think the premise is going to be that it's kind of dark, but more in like a dark comedy way and not yeah. like a really dark way, and kind of enemies to lovers, and I'm like really looking forward to it.
Yeah,
so.
That's not sounding good. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's my list for this week, but lots of really great one-shots. So, it was a fun reading week for sure.
Hell yeah. Yeah, no, you're going to have to send a bunch of those to me.
Yeah.
I like a one-shot too. You know, you're yeah. not totally committed to reading something very long, but it does have a great payoff. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Those sound yeah. really good.
They were all really good. So, that was fun. All right. Well, we will be back next week, and until then, I guess we will catch you on the flip side.
Catch you on the flip side.
Peace.